I give you Mike Lorenz and Leslie Glantz.
Well, I'm Leslie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
and, man, is it delightful to be here. I don't really, we kind of loosely sort of kind of corralled our thoughts, but should I talk for a minute and just say a little something, something?
You're the
and
princess.
Then,
okay,
I'm the princess.
As you wish, dear.
As I wish. So I've had a blast since I've been here. Thank you all for your hospitality, from Tarek to John picking us up at the airport, the busiest airport in the world, mind you, that's under construction, and it's 91 degrees out there, and it was just thanks, and the ooey gooeys are fabulous. And just the wonderful, gave us a wonderful little gift in the room, and just being here, everybody's so friendly, and I just feel the language of the heart walking in here, and the grounds are terrific. I love going to monasteries. I grew up Catholic and gave God the back of my hand, and went off and I was looking for. I knew there was something out there, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't God, you know. And I was looking and looking and looking and drinking and looking, and I finally have come back around to. You know, it's just an interesting fact. If you're atheist, that's completely fine, or agnostic, but I have come back to the religion of my roots for the most part. Now, if I were to sit down with the Pope and tell him what I think Catholicism is, he'd probably say, oh, no, that ain't what we think at all. So I might be a heretic, but I'll tell you, I have found in all this travel of finding, looking, trying to reach out, you guys taught me how to embark on that. You know, I got desperate enough to actually listen to what you were saying. You were saying, you know, just close your eyes, reach out. There's something, just, oh, there's a little bit of it. And just being patient, like bird watching. And as I started doing that, it's like the universe started reaching back. And it was just this wonderful little back and forth, getting closer. And so I love, you know, one of the things that was integral with that whole process is being in a space, you know, being in a space that's conducive to that, especially in a world where, you know, I get on the elevator and immediately everybody on the elevator looking at their phone and they're doing this and there's so much distraction. And to be able to just come and breathe. Just breathe and be in a place that's sacramental, you know, that it's just not, it's not busy and exciting and distracting, but it's just right here where we are with nature. And so, you know, I can find that at the Grand Canyon. I can find it in a monastery. I can find it in my backyard. You know, I can find it in my meditation chair. I can find it lots of places, but it's really nice to come to a place like this. So thank you for the invite, and I think Mike and I just kind of wanted to get to know who we all are, and just sort of throw everything out and see what bubbles up to the surface as far as what we talk about. I think it's sort of our relationship with the power of the universe, God, Buddha, Allah, electromagnetic energy, whatever it is you want to call it. How do we come to that? You know, because we say, you know, you took alcohol away from me and said, well, we'll replace it with God. You know, whatever that, thanks, that's not really what I was looking for. And how do you do that? I mean, my next question was, well, how do you do that? I mean, it's not like God sends letters, you know? I mean, how do you know? How do you know? And you kind of taught me how to reach out, but it's a continuous process. It's not like, oh, there's God, okay, I'm good. It's you know, every year it's different. You know, when you're 5 months, and when you're a year, and when you're 2 years, and when you're 10 years, and it tends to look different, you know, because I'm different. You can't put your toe in the same river twice, right? So I hope I think that's kind of what we want to do, is to go through the steps with the idea of how, where's God in all of this, in the first step, in the second step, and what does it look like down the road, you know, reaching out. Or in, however you think of it. So anyway, I just ramble on and wait for God to catch up, and hopefully that happens. With that said, go ahead.
Oh, Mike, alcoholic.
Aye.
And Leslie and I share a home group together, and I'll tell you, what you just heard, when Leslie talks in the home group, nobody's looking at their phone, they're listening to Leslie. She's a jewel, and I'm thrilled to be able to do this with her. This is the first time I've gotten to do one of these with her, so I'm listening. Now, I tend to think in images, so Friday night at one of these deals is like we're surfing and we're paddling out to see where the wave is, you know. And even if we had the same people here a week or a month from now, the wave would be different than it's going to be this weekend. So what we need to do is pay attention to who we are and where we are right now and try and help you have your weekend. See, when I started doing these, I got a bit, of course, caught up in myself, and my teacher, Don, said, no, Mike, you don't get it. He says, you're just kind of like the organ grinder's monkey here. The real magic happens between the sessions and when you go and all this kind of stuff. The only reason you really have value here is to help gather the crowd and maybe move some things along. So that's really what my understanding is what we're going to be doing. And my experience, again, from the teacher is that it doesn't matter how much you know in terms of technique, how much of the big book you have memorized, any of these things. Telling people what to do is absolutely futile until you can demonstrate why they might want to be interested in that. And that's what caught me, because part of my story that will emerge as we talk here was I was somebody that came to AA after a lot of struggles, finally got sober, stayed sober for 5 years, got everything pretty much on the wish list. Got a new career, got a new wife, got a new stepson, living on the cul-de-sac, driving a nice imported car. And the only problem is, and I'm going to, by the way, I'm getting every service position I can get my hands on. And as that fifth anniversary rolled around, I liked Alcoholics Anonymous. I liked the people. I had lots of friends there. But my secret that I couldn't tell you was that it wasn't working for me. I was completely dead inside. None of those things that I thought were going to fix me had fixed me. Now, I loved that wife, and I loved that stepson, and that career was growing. It seemed like like a sugar rush. It felt good at the beginning, but it just kind of, okay, so what else? Maybe it must be something else. I'm missing it. And what happened was right here, going to 11 meetings a week, starting my own meeting, being a GSR, an intergroup rep, you know, you name it, I'll be whatever it is. I think I'm engaged in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it turns out what I did was a lot like I did when I went to the University of Iowa a million years ago. I went over the field house, registered for all my classes, went and bought my books at the bookstore, joined a fraternity, threw the books in the closet, and began to party. And if you asked me what I was doing when you ran into me on campus, I'm a pre-law student here at the University of Iowa. And that was technically true, except I was rarely in class and almost unscarred by the educational process there. So the same thing happened here. I got the fellowship, I got the service, I just missed the program. and I didn't know that I would have done that, because it looked like I'd checked all the boxes. And as it turned out, I got my life saved further from a drink than I could imagine I could get by the guy I disliked most in Alcoholics Anonymous at the time. I really hated him. He was annoying, you know. And besides that, he was cute. And, oh, it was terrible. Well, I might as well get it out of the way now. The real reason, I met Gary when I was getting a 90-day chip and he was getting a 21-year token. And Gary, for those of you who don't know him, Gary's now 53, going on 54 years sober. And he was the Marlboro man in AA then, you know. He's a tall cowboy out of Colorado and in Wyoming. And what really caused it, that this is pre-marriage, but, you know, at the time, my married girlfriend thought he was cute. And like I said, we'll just get that out of the way up front. I've wanted to get that out of my AA resume for years, and I was told I can't because there will be other stupid people doing what I did. When I was about 2 years sober, I got fired by my second sponsor because I was dating a married woman in the program, sponsoring her 16-year-old son, and I was playing euchre on the weekends with her husband, who was a gun-toting federal agent. Drama, excitement became my new drug, you know. And George grabbed me in the parking lot outside the club that one day and said, Mike, I can't work with you anymore. He says, every time I try and talk to you about your behavior here, you start to explain it to me in such a way that I actually begin to think it could be God's will. And he says, I know that's insane, so I can't have anything to do with you. Good luck. Yeah. So, you know, we don't know what the package looks like that our miracle is going to come wrapped in. It almost never comes wrapped the way we think it's going to be. So with that said, if we could maybe quickly just kind of go around and we'll take 2 hours if everybody takes 3 minutes. So if we can just do no more than who you are, what you are, maybe if there's something particularly pressing that you'd like to get addressed this weekend, and try and keep that package a little tight. So we can start right over here with Zona.
I'm Erica. I'm an addict. My lovely sponsor helped me realize that I'm a little dramatic, so I can identify with what you're saying. That's right, because I didn't see it, so I can identify with you. It's something I might need to work on. But fuck it.
I'm Amanda, and I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Amanda.
Hi. Yeah,
we
seen
mine.
Yep.
Hi. Hi. Hey, I'm Emma. I'm cocaine addict and alcoholic.
I'm Mike, alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
I'm James, I'm an alcoholic.
James.
I'm Daniel, I'm an alcoholic and addict.
I'm Brandon, I'm a heroin addict.
Brandon.
I'm Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Stephanie.
I'm Chris, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
I'm Jen, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jen. I'm Robert, I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Doug, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I'm Bill, I'm a heroin addict.
Bill. Taylor, heroin addict.
I'm John, I'm an alcoholic.
Danny, I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Mike, I'm an alcoholic.
Oh,
you got this.
Nope, Carl, alcoholic.
Carl.
I'm Molly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I'm Drew, and I'm an alcoholic, and nobody's following the rules that you just used.
That
I'm here because
I always find it interesting to see things from a different point of view.
Crazy.
Amblyomatic. And yeah, I'm here because I wanted to be here.
Right. I'm alcoholic and I'm here to dip my foot in the river one more time.
Okay.
I'm alcoholic. Just grateful to be around the program.
My name is Tony, I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Jim, I'm an alcoholic and addict, and I'm here because I've got a lot to learn.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jim. I'm George. I'm a heroin addict and alcoholic, and I'm here to learn things as well.
Hey, George.
Paul, addict and alcoholic, here to grow.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Elric, drug addict, and I'm here because my heart wants me here.
So, I'm Treywick. I'm addict.
Treywick.
Yeah, I'm here because at first it was suggested that I go, and now I'm just looking forward to the experience.
I'm Tarek. I'm an addict.
Tarek.
I think I described it at when I was up there, but to watch the contagion effect happen. That's why I'm here.
Thanks, Chris. I'm a crystal meth addict and a cocaine addict, and this program has saved my life, and I'm here for a new experience.
Yeah. I'm Chris.
I'm Reed. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Reed.
And don't ask why God puts me anywhere anymore.
You want me to go?
Sure.
Hey, my name is Vadim, also a heroin addict. Why am I here? I'm here because I want to be ready and willing and available, and so I feel like this will bring me closer to that.
My name is Glenn. I'm an alcoholic, and
Glenn.
I always love these weekends. It's a fresh perspective, and I'm glad I'm here.
Matt, I'm an alcoholic. Here for a new experience and see what happens.
I'm Casey. I'm an alcoholic.
Casey.
This guy said this program saved my life, and I'm always willing to see where God brings me and have a new experience.
My name's Ben. I'm an addict. I'm just here to have an open mind and just have zero expectations and hopefully take something away from that. So.
Thanks,
Jamie.
I'm Jamie. I'm here
when I go be an addict.
I'm just here to listen and learn. I'm really excited for this
weekend.
Thanks, Jamie.
Hey, I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Lindsay. I'm here
because
I'm here. I'm Mike, and I'm an alcoholic.
Right.
Just excited to listen to what y'all's lead.
I'm Corey. I'm a heroin addict. I'm here to become more aware of God.
I'm Colin. I'm a heroin addict.
Colin.
Top. I'm here to build on the experience that I'm having. Hear whatever it is I'm supposed to hear.
Thanks, Colin.
I'm Reese. I'm a cocaine addict. I'm here because somebody thought it was important enough to get extra money, and I got a scholarship. And I don't really know why else I'm here. I mean, this is where I'm supposed to be.
That's right.
Thanks, Reese.
I'm Brittany. I'm an opiate addict and an alcoholic.
Hey, Brittany.
Hey guys, I'm here because I love these people and I love this program and it's saving my life and I love this process, this 12-step process. So I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
I'm Emily. I'm a heroin addict.
Hey,
I'm
Emily.
I'm here because I'm supposed to be here.
Everybody, I'm Mike. I'm a cocaine addict. I'm here because this is something that I've never done before, and what's brought to my attention, you know, is, it's kind of like that consent prior to investigation, right? Try something that's go out and see what happens. That's an experience. Thanks.
Nice. Thanks.
My name is Drew, and I'm a recovering addict.
Drew.
I came last year, and it rocked my world. I went back to the halfway house I was at, and I was, like, so on fire, they were making fun of me. But I'm here again to see if my world can get rocked yet again.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm with you, baby.
I'm Hunter, I'm a heroin addict. Hey y'all, I'm here, this is my first time here, so trying to see what this thing's all about. Heard a lot about it, so.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Hunter.
Thanks, Hunter.
Thanks,
Hunter.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Jess, I'm an addict.
Yes.
I'm Katie, I am an addict and an alcoholic. I had some, like, really profound shit to say. Of course I'm here to have an open mind and everything, but I think the more uncomfortable I am is when I grow the most, and right now I feel like I'm going to die talking, so I'm just here.
Growing.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thanks,
Katie.
Yeah,
it's
Zach.
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 Zach. Who are you? Why are you here?
I'm Zach. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. I am late.
Of course you are.
I'm here because life led me here, and I want to
Is that everybody? Nice. Well, gosh, this is so cool. I am just impressed with how many young people there are in the room. I mean, chronologically young. It's just cool to see people on fire. God, thanks for everything that you guys said. That I think we're all kind of singing out of the same hymnal here, you know, and I love it. I quit asking questions to start with why, right? I don't know why I'm here. I'm just led. And, I'll tell you, Mike and I, we're definitely not experts, you know. And I used to think, you know, when I was in early recovery, I used to think, oh, man, they're from out of town. They're like, you know, experts. And I'm just, you know what, I'm just the common AA at my meeting. I, you know, put the chairs out and I put the pamphlets out. And, you know, that's just that I'm not an expert. I make a lot of mistakes. I call my sponsor with stupid stuff. You know, I'm learning. There are times that I think, well, I haven't had a drink in 23 years. I celebrated 23 years last Tuesday, September 18, 1995. That's a huge number. I saw it in the text, "Happy 23," and I thought, "Wow, that's big. That's a lot of time." And I'll tell you this right quick. I got a job on the day I got sober, and I rolled out of bed, and I was on the floor. I woke up on the floor, and I in the bathroom, and I knew where the AA meetings were because I kind of dabbled in AA, and I ran in, and I hadn't had a job in 2 weeks, and I needed a job, so I was in the hotel business, and I cooked, and I worked in restaurants, and there was this fine dining restaurant that I wanted to work in, and I was just really shaky, so I went to the 10:30 meeting, and then I thought, well, I got to go, you know, go get a job, and so I knew I was just too shaky to go in for a job interview, so I needed a warm-up interview, right, a practice interview, so I went to this other place, and I thought, that'd be nice to work there, and he hired me right on the spot, right? And he said, can you start Thursday? And I'm like, well, you know, a bird in the hand. I said, okay. And then we're talking about like a shift drink or something. And I said, I guess I just needed to wrap myself out. And I said, well, I'm a recovering alcoholic. And he said, oh, that's great. How long have you been sober? I want to say about 10 minutes now, you know. So I said 2 years because that seemed like a monster amount of time, you know, and which it is. I mean, ask anybody who's ever had 2 years and they'll tell you that's a very long time. So anyway, I don't know why I said all that. I will say this. I'll take a little time here. And so, you know, with regard to like the first, like coming in, you know, I was like, it talks in here about being a baffled lot. And I remember being so baffled. I couldn't understand why I couldn't wrangle my drinking. You know, I had a drinking buddy, Carol, and she would, she'd go toe-to-toe with me. We'd go out, and we'd just get crazy and drink all night, and she'd get up and go to work the next day, and she made her mortgage payment. She never wrecked her car, and I couldn't understand how she had the same job for, you know, 16 years, and all this kind of stuff. And she could stop and start drinking iced tea in the middle of the afternoon on a Saturday. And I thought, why would you do that? And I never understood. And I always, my goal was always to drink like Carol. I just want to learn how to drink like Carol. Because, I mean, you look at society, Keith Richard, you know, I mean, his alcoholism and his drug use doesn't have anything to do with his successful life, right? And Ernest Hemingway and, you know, all my idols who died as a result of their, well, I guess Keith Richard hasn't died yet, but you know what I mean? All the people that I thought I want to be like them just burned their life to the ground, but they were still able to maintain what I thought was a successful life. And so I wanted to drink like Carolyn, and I thought, you know, that I'm just doing it wrong. I'm just doing everything wrong. And so when I come into recovery, you know, I try to do these things. We talk about, you know, working on our character defects, right? And so I just, why can't I just be nice? Why can't I just, you know, do what I say I'm going to do? Why can't I just do this stuff in AA that they recommend? And what I discovered is, one of the things I discovered is that it was like this aha moment that I'm not actually supposed to do that. You know, we talk about this sixth step and seventh step that God removes this stuff, right? And I thought, well, I just got to bear down and be on time, you know? And why can't I do that? Just apply more pressure. And there's, you know, it occurs to me that in this relationship, that God wants to have a relationship with me. This is a two-way street. You know, like when you have a sponsee, God doesn't put two people together to change one, right? That I learn, and sponsee learns, and it goes back and forth. And it seems like it's that way, or it seems to be modeled out in the world, you know, when I'm aware. That nature, that God, you know, and I'll again apologize to my atheist and agnostic friends. I use the word God because it's my chosen word, but it's just so easy. It's just so much easier to, and ascribe, just take that out and place in whatever it is you want to put there. But that this God, it's this whole process seems interactive, you know, and that there's stuff that God does and there's stuff that I do. You know, I'm not supposed to just be nice. I used to have a job in a hotel where we were making, I think, beef Wellingtons. So the chef told me to make some, like, 45 beef Wellingtons. And it comes with pastry crust, right? And so there I am making pastry crust, and I'm awful at it. And I'm thinking, I'm not a baker. I don't know how to do this stuff. Why would I? And it's taking forever, and it's taking forever, and I'm not, and it's just not coming together. And he comes by, and he says, what's taking so long? I said, my pastry crust. He said, no, it's not your job to do the pastry crust. I mean, that's why we have bakers. You know, why don't you do this part? And let the baker take care of the pastry crust. And it seems like that with my relationship with God, that I don't have to have it all together. I come with this little mess where I'm gossiping at work and I'm just, you know, in tears about it now, and I bring it to God, and it's, why can't I just not gossip? And it's like, well, you know, that I don't know, I made you that way. And then that's my biggest beef. You know, that was my biggest beef with Rita. I'd say, who in there, you know what, if I were God, I wouldn't have done this. I treat my kitty cats better than God treats me. And, I mean, why did I have to be human? You know, why couldn't I have been a polar bear or an aspen tree or something like that? But to be human, I mean, it's like a cruel trick. Why would you create something and let it suffer? Man's inhumanity to man, all this kind of stuff. And she was just like, is it Drew? What's your name?
Reed.
Reed, yeah. Like, Reed, I, you know, just kind of don't ask questions. Just start with why. I don't know why. I don't know, but can you just give God the benefit of the doubt? And so many things have come up out of what I think are the manure of my life, and it feels like that's exactly, like God created the manure in order for, you know, for growth. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm able to look at things that way, and when I was able to kind of come into recovery with, I just don't know. Here, take me to your leader. I just turn myself completely over. I don't know. You know, beginner's mind is so valuable. I mean, these monks here strive for to just maintain a beginner's mind. I don't know. Teach me. Lead me. And man, people say that they're afraid of the unknown. And I'll tell you, I if I were smart, I'd be afraid of what I know for sure. You know, what I know for sure is going to get me in trouble. Instead of just, you know, the contempt prior to investigation. Just show up. I think that's about all I need to say right now. I'm talking to you.
Wow. Well, now you know why we're excited to have her in the home group. And she does that. I mean, she shows up on her 23rd anniversary, but she shows up early. she sets up the entire room. She moves tables around because the facility has got other stuff that does this. And, you know, chop wood, carry water. I mean, that's it. And it's not somebody with just a set of nice sounding words and so forth. So it's my privilege to sponsor a guy that's 44 years sober now. And we do the steps every year. And so when I talk to, when we're doing this, okay, it's important back and forth. So, okay, I just celebrated 33 years. So how does powerlessness and unmanageability show up and look today? You know, the surrender that I had on September 7th, 1985, is a nice footnote back there. But it's like trying to breathe yesterday's air. I mean, it just, you know, it's nice, Mike, but so what? And it turns out that as I go along, that the beginning of the solution of every dilemma that I have, problem, if you will, is the acknowledgement that I don't have enough power to get this done. See, I confuse the fact that I'm not a sociopath or a psychopath, although I've acted like one on many occasions. But I confuse the fact that I have good intentions. I want you to be happy. I wanted that wife to be happy. I wanted to be a good dad to that kid and everything else. And so I'm trying as hard as I can in the way I described to you. And after a few years, that woman that I love, and the miracles happened. I've been faithful in this deal. I mean, that's new behavior. And all this kind of stuff. But trying as hard as I can, Lori's looking at me and she says, Mike, I got to tell you, being married to you is the loneliest thing I've ever tried to do. Pay attention if somebody you care about tells you something like that. And on and on and on. See, my good intentions didn't give me in the emotional love and everything else that I had in this situation didn't add up to the needed power to show up and be the kind of husband that she deserved to have. It doesn't have to be elaborate every time. I don't have to join a workshop. But all of a sudden, if I find myself at loggerheads or upset or feeling whatever, you know, off the beam, I'm going nowhere as long as I think I've got the power to change this. Now, I've got to exhaust all the other options for a while. You know, okay, so I'll go buy a pint of Haagen-Dazs and suck that down, and that'll make me feel good for a while. I'll go buy a bunch of stuff, and that'll briefly change the way I feel. I used to be addicted to German cars, and I had this really nice, blessed, remember that gray BMW twin turbo coupe, you know. And I'm standing out. Here's what a spiritual awakening sounds like. I'm standing outside the beginners meeting, you know, after it's over. And this young guy comes up to me. He says, wow, man, that's really some set of wheels. And I said, yeah. He said, what's it like to have something like that? And I said, and a voice that I didn't understand answered him. It says, it's really exciting for about a week. And after that, it's just pretty much like everything else. That kid saved me a lot of money. I haven't had to buy a car since. But see, the thing is, you all know, you already have the answers. We all do. I've just locked, they're locked up. It's kind of like when you get a new Windows computer, and if you want to pay this, you can unlock this extra feature, and if you can, all this kind of stuff. I just don't have the keys to unlock the knowledge that I intuitively carry with me here. And this process isn't so much a process of going out and finding out what I don't know. It's coming across the stuff that's been blocking me, or as Leslie said, the things I believed I know that just aren't so. Practically all the meetings in our area begin with the reading of how it works, you know. And rarely have we seen a person fail, and so all this kind of stuff. And they talk about, you know, something I just missed for a while, old ideas. Old ideas. Okay. I think I should drive a German car. There's an old idea. And, you know, the fact is, a friend of mine, that a guy by the name of Clint Hodges, mentored me a bit, and Clint was enjoying time with his wife, and he called up and reported this to me. He says, you know, he says, I asked Linda what we ought to do this weekend. Now, Clint, you got to understand, was $1 million lawyer in L.A. and lived in a nice place in Brentwood and all the toys and everything else. And he says, I asked Linda, what should we do this weekend? And she says, well, honey, why don't we see if we can't find an old idea and get rid of it? It turned out, you know, with everything in the material world, being realizing that she intuitively knew that what was between them and more happiness and more freedom was these old ideas. It wasn't about going out and being able to go down to Rodeo Drive and buy something. It was about being able to let something go. And I've got a little graphic illustration for you here, I think. Oh, yes, here we go. Now, for those you can see, this is kind of a cute young gal. These were old days when pictures still came on paper. And here's the story. I don't like people in California. I don't like California. The scenery can be okay, and sometimes some of the food can be okay, but the place just generally sucks. and yeah.
You know, you could be all right.
So the very first one of these things I ever did, where did God send me? But to Santa Barbara, to the old mission there that burned down a few years back. And, of course, it's California. And I hate it. And, you know, over the years going back, and now I've got friends in California, and I'm riding with my friend Jay one day, and it just comes up, and I spew all this, you know, out. And he says, where does this attitude come from? And I says, you people suck. I said, I came back from Vietnam, flew into Oakland Army Terminal, got discharged from the Army, got my civilian clothes, and went over to San Francisco International to fly home to Iowa. I'm an Iowa boy originally, and everything else. And they cursed us, and they spit on us, and they screamed at us, and called us baby killers, and all this kind of stuff. I said, you know, you just suck. I was traumatized coming out of there. I'd nearly been killed and shot a couple of times, all this kind of stuff. I'm, you know. He said, oh, so that just trailed off. Well, God's got a sense of humor. Not too long after that conversation, I got a call from a family member. And since I've got some of the old family pictures in shoeboxes here, they said, well, Mike, would you see if you have a picture of this particular family gathering? And so I said, I'll look for it. Well, I didn't find the picture, but I found this. And I thought, I don't know who she is. And then I turned it over and I says, says to Mike, with love from Kathy. Apparently I knew her. and then I looked right below that, the date. The date is April 29th, 1969. That actually matches the date that is on my Army discharge papers. And here's what happened. All of a sudden, the lie broke, I got out of the Army. I went to San Francisco International to fly home. I went in the bar to have a drink. I met Kathy. Kathy and I had a drink together, and then she took me home to her apartment and spent the next 3 days welcoming me back to the United States. Now, there's no way in hell that I can tell my mother in Iowa that her oldest son, who's been shot and everything, is going to hang out with the chick in San Francisco for a couple of days instead of coming home to her. So I have to come up with a story. They were mean to me. They were rotten. You don't know what happened to me. It was terrible trying to get out of there. It was worse than combat. All this. And I tell this story with such conviction. It wasn't a lie for very, very long. It became the truth. And I'm emotionally reacting to this 40 and almost 50 years after it actually happened. I'm ready to punch somebody out. I won't enjoy myself in California based on this old idea, this lie I made up. Now, I think it's highly unlikely that this is the only one of these that's hiding out there for me. See, what's really, the book talks about our stories disclose in a general way. Well, I get these stories about things. I got the story about how I was brought up and how I was this and how I was that and everything else. And all of a sudden, I'm in bondage to these stories. And they aren't even true. Or at least not the way that I thought they were. And something that I saw from a 5-year-old, 10-year-old, 20-year-old's perspective, I'm now letting drive my life and shut me off from the sunlight of the Spirit and from happiness today. And nobody else is doing that to me. Nobody at all. Nobody at all. See, the first drug I got hooked on was approval. Before I found the relief, I mean, I had a whole story. I got to tell this too quickly because I came to AA and told a story about what a horrible childhood I had for a long time. And I've got friends that did have horrible childhoods, but I wasn't one of them. I was the firstborn. I was the first grandchild. I was treated like a little freaking prince. When I was 3 years old, my sister was born, and the family still talks about it, that when I was asked what I wanted for Christmas that year, it was for them to send her back. My amends to my siblings, I'm the oldest of four, my amends were largely that I acted and behaved like I was an only child in that family the whole time. And, maybe my parents, for whatever reason, enabled some of that behavior, but, it wasn't that anything, they were doing anything bad to me. they were terrified for me. Part of the value that I get from sitting in Al-Anon meetings on a regular basis with my wife and keeping my mouth shut is I get to see the impact of alcoholism on people that love us. Couple New Year's, what was New Year's 2016, and my future wife, and I was with her anyway. What happened, the short story there was what happens, we got word that her nephew, her brother's son, had 25 years old, had texted his girlfriend breaking up with her, stepped out of his car and put a gun to his head and killed himself. And I got to watch that tidal wave hit that family. I didn't know the kid personally, but I watched what happened, and I remembered, see, one of my techniques was, you know, Mike saw a lot of combat. Mike was, you know, there are a lot of horrible things, a lot of, you know, stuff. So I wouldn't threaten overtly suicide. I just let my mother see me cleaning my gun when I needed a little money, you know, and she hadn't been quick enough to write the check. And I thought these were skills, you know. And I come to realize, holy shit, I was an abused child. I was a terrorist in my home. My parents and my siblings loved me, and they were scared to death that something was going to happen to me. And I used that. I wiggled the knife in there to get what I thought I needed. And so these stories start dropping away. What we're looking about is looking about a way to find out what the story was. And it's about time for us to take a break here. We're going to try and keep these sessions to about 45, 50 minutes. This will be the first group conscience. I'm going to suggest 10 to 15 minutes. When you gather, that will have the group conscience on when we're going to start again here. So.